On the feature this week, a look at the suicides of two elderly people, both doctor-assisted, in Toronto.
As we think of the differences and distinctions in worldviews, it comes down now to whether or not you see the story of George and Shirley Brickenden as a beautiful love story lived out to their own chosen beautiful end, or if it is instead the victory of the culture of death over the sanctity of human life.
In the news, a court challenge to Alberta's Bill 24, a fake police complaint about alleged pro-life violence in Ontario, some disturbing new statistics on late-term abortions in Canada, and Alberta introduces bubble zone legislation.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Alberta's Bill 24, the law that was passed late last year, which expressly forbids school teachers, principals, and other employees from telling parents about children who have chosen to join so-called gay-straight alliance clubs, is being challenged in court. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms announced the court challenge last week on behalf of 25 schools across Alberta. Other parties to the suit include 9 parents and 2 groups, Parents for Choice in Education and the Western Canadian branch of Christian Schools International. In all, the lawsuit represents the interests of thousands of students across the province. The Justice Center's John Carpe says the suit is based on the notion that the law violates some basic legal principles.
It violates the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which Canada is a party, which says that the government must respect the freedom of parents to educate their own children according to their own moral and religious convictions. And it's against parental rights that are protected by Section 2 and Section 7 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The charter right to life, liberty, and security of the person is in Charter Section 7, and so parental rights are included amongst the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. The other important charter section protects freedom of conscience and religion, which means the right of parents to educate their children in religious schools. And the government has to respect the character and culture of these faith-based schools.
The actual case likely won't be heard for at least a year, but there is a court date looming at the end of this month in which Carpe will be asking for an injunction to stay the effects of the law pending the full hearing.
The first hearing is going to be an application to stay the law during the court process, which is going to take 1.5 to 2.5 years. So we want a court order that this legislation is null and void while the court action is taking place.
ARPA is considering filing for intervener status in the case. An interesting story from the Waterloo Regional Police Service in Ontario. Back in March, police announced that they were investigating an incident in which a pro-choice activist claimed she'd been assaulted in a Tim Hortons parking lot in Kitchener, right near the offices of what's called the Shore Center, what used to be the local Planned Parenthood clinic. The woman told the CBC that a man shouted murderer at her and threw a can of red paint in her face, leaving her with blurred vision and broken blood vessels in one eye. Then, last week, Waterloo Regional Police released another statement saying the woman was herself being charged with mischief because police had determined the assault never happened. In other words, the complaint was a hoax. The suspect, 41-year-old Sarah Robertson, is well known for abortion activism in Ontario. She was present when Ontario's bubble zone law was enacted and when the signs went up outside the Morgenthaler Clinic in Ottawa. At that time, she complained about pro-lifers scrawling aggressive and nasty slogans on her hotel room door in Ottawa. At the time, Ottawa police said they wouldn't be commenting unless someone was charged, and that apparently never happened. She's due in court in the Kitchener incident on June 1st. The Canadian Institute for Health Information, CIHI, is out with some disturbing new statistics on late-term abortions in Canada. Those are abortions done after 20 weeks gestation. Pro-life blogger Patricia Maloney has gone through the numbers, which cover the 2016-2017 fiscal year.
There were 901 stillbirths from termination of pregnancy, so it means that it was an actual abortion and it resulted in a stillbirth. And as well, there were 152 live birth abortions. Those are the numbers. We don't know why these abortions are happening.
Again, those are all late-term abortions, defined as done after 20 weeks gestation. The numbers do not include statistics from Quebec, which doesn't provide those numbers to CIHI. And finally, the Alberta government has introduced so-called bubble zone legislation, a law to bar pro-life protests anywhere near abortion clinics. ARPA lawyer John Sikkema says this law is very similar to ones that are already on the books in BC and Ontario, but it adds a provision that makes it illegal to try to talk anyone out of becoming an abortion provider. Sikkema says it's only a matter of time before all these laws end up being challenged in the courts, but he's worried that reality might deter Alberta's opposition politicians from speaking out against this.
One of the concerns, of course, is that politicians just think, well, if it's that bad, if it's that unconstitutional, then someone will deal with it in court and we can just avoid the wedge issue. And that is really one of the bigger unfortunate developments in light of the charter. Because some of these issues are dealt with in court, that politicians think they can just ignore these things and leave them for the courts to deal with. So hopefully that's not what will happen in Alberta. But yes, there are hopefully going to be legal challenges launched.
ARPA has launched a campaign against this new law in Alberta. Here's grassroots manager Colin Postma.
Alberta's NDP have tabled Bill 9 to create bubble zones around abortion clinics. If passed, someone could go to jail for simply informing a woman outside a clinic of other options available to her. The government should not censor one side of a debate in a free society. This law claims to protect women, but will fine and imprison women who disagree on this issue. Preborn children are humans too, and we must be free to advocate for them and to offer life-affirming options to their moms. Send an easy mail to your MLA at easy.arpacanada.ca to voice your opposition.
On the feature this week, some analysis of a recent case of doctor-assisted suicide. George and Shirley Brickenden were both euthanized together in their bed at a Toronto-area retirement home last month. They were both in their 90s. They'd been married for almost 73 years and made a deliberate decision that they wanted to die together. Today, a rebroadcast of a portion of a program called The Briefing by Albert Moeller from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, in which he analyzes some of the underlying worldview issues brought to light by this story. Dr. Moeller also refers to another article on the issue of doctor-assisted death, and we link to that from the Lighthouse News homepage. And now, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Just a few weeks before the deaths of the Brickendens, the Globe and Mail had run a massive consideration of the development of physician-assisted suicide in Canada. The article was written by Sandra Martin, who has also written a major book on the subject, and she noted that in Canada there was what she described as a long struggle to legalize physician-assisted death. And she also points out that there were many twists and turns in this story. Every single one of them deserves our attention. Martin noted first the so-called Carter decision that was handed down by Canada's Supreme Court on February the 6th of 2015. In that decision, the court found that there was a right, according to the Canadian Charter of Rights, that gave citizens there the right to demand physician-assisted suicide. But that very same decision demanded that Parliament come up with legislation that would authorize how physician-assisted suicide should take place. But as it turned out, and Sandra Martin makes this clear too, the actual regulations vary province by province, as medical practice is delegated to the provinces for a good deal of regulatory authority. Parliament basically went on and authorized the overarching legislation, and in doing so, they again promised that they were adopting all kinds of precautions and stipulations that would limit access to physician-assisted suicide only to those who were defined as having a terminal disease or being in interminable suffering, and again, whose death was reasonably foreseeable. But this very article by Sandra Martin points out that those who have been pushing the limits on physician-assisted death have been doing so by using even such techniques as actuarial tables in order to say that that foreseeable future, in terms of their death, could well be 5 to 6 years out. Then, quite shortly after that, it could be 10 years out. And even as Martin points out that there were some physicians ready to support and to provide physician-assisted suicide, she also points to the fact that the great obstacle in many ways was and is the medical profession. Doctors, she writes, quote, are trained to save lives, not to end them. And furthermore, one of the documentations made in the article is that those physicians who were trained in the specific subspecialization of palliative care are not those who in the main have taken up the task of physician-assisted suicide. Rather, other doctors who clearly are driven by a moral interest more than a medical specialization have given themselves to this practice more than others. Sandra Martin writes, quote, an idea that was once impossible to imagine is becoming normalized. An estimated 2,500 people in Canada have died with medical assistance in the past 3 years. Martin then writes, there is no turning back. We are a country that recognizes that medical assistance in death is a human right. That's an astounding statement, first of all, that there's no turning back, and secondly, that Canada has become a society that recognizes the equivalent of a constitutional right to physician-assisted suicide. Martin says that this became a debatable issue in Canada in the 1990s. Back then, she said, Canadians heard a lot about the sanctity of life. Like so many lofty ideals, she wrote, the concept that life is precious was tossed around in a legal, medical, and ethical discussion, but many people were not clear what it meant. Here we should simply note that if people do not know what the sanctity of human life means, there's full evidence here that what they will do is undermine, subvert, and attempt to destroy that sanctity. Martin points to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which she says was in its infancy in the 1990s. She also points out that no other jurisdiction in the world had yet implemented a legal and regulatory context for physician-assisted suicide. Interestingly, the Globe and Mail tells us that the kind of physician actively and rather eagerly involved in physician-assisted suicide is represented by someone like Dr. Ellen Wiebe, identified as a clinical professor in family medicine at the University of British Columbia. She also, according to the paper, is a specialist for more than 40 years in women's health, providing antenatal care, contraception, and medical abortions. Now, here we should simply note the fact that when you begin to undermine the sanctity of human life and redefine humanity, you have to do so, most importantly, at the margins of life, the huge ethical issues where life and death meet. And you also have to do so at the beginning and the end of life, where the greatest vulnerabilities amongst human beings are found. So we really shouldn't be surprised by this Globe and Mail story telling us that a doctor who has given herself to abortion is now giving herself to physician-assisted suicide. It's all of a piece. It's a story with a beginning and an end, and all kinds of moral confusion in the middle. We also must observe once again that Canada is following a trajectory, culturally and morally, also expanded to the reality of worldview, that is more in sync with Europe than with the United States. But that does not mean that the United States is far behind. We are perhaps just one major court decision from a similar kind of action in the United States, and we have also been subverting here the sanctity of human life in virtually every way imaginable. In her article, Sandra Martin acknowledges rather fully the fact that there is a huge need for increased regulation in Canada because physicians and others have been pushing the limits that were supposedly set in place in order to protect persons over against the reality of too easy access to physician-assisted suicide. But here we simply must observe that the culture of death resists every single boundary. It will find a way around every single regulation. When you redefine medicine, redefine humanity, and redefine life and death, you're going to find a way to redefine every word of every regulation, law, and court decision. You might say that as we think of the differences and distinctions in worldviews, it comes down now to whether or not you see the story of George and Shirley Brickenden as a beautiful love story lived out to their own chosen beautiful end, or if it is instead the victory of the culture of death over the sanctity of human life. And of course, what's lurking in the background here is that there could not be such a redefinition of life or of death without a fundamental reshifting and reordering of the theological landscape. The bottom line is that physician-assisted suicide as part of the culture of death goes hand in hand with secularism. Secularism's sacraments are abortion and physician-assisted suicide. That doesn't mean that secularism is less religious. It's very religious. But what it does mean is that secularism is very deadly.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.